This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the world's most extensive and valuable collections of African music has come to the University of Michigan. It's the Leo Sarkisian Collection of African Music, and it's a mind-boggling collection. Just what does this significant collection of African music mean to scholars across many disciplines? Kelly Askew is here now with us. She's an associate professor in the departments of Anthropology and Afro-American and African Studies, and she's founding director of U of M's African Studies Center. Thank you for joining us today, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
And we are so happy to welcome none other than Leo Sarkisian into the program. Leo is an ethnomusicologist. He was the longtime host of Music Time in Africa for the Voice of America. And Leo is kind enough to join us from his home in Maryland. Hello, Leo.
Hello, hello. It's happy to be here with you.
It's very good to have you with us. I want to start with you, Kelly, and describe to us just what is in Leo's collection and why the arrival at U of M is such a source of excitement.
Leo's collection has to be one of the most significant collections of African music in existence right now in the world. Unlike other collectors of African music who are driven by a particular passion, I mean, I know of a person who is absolutely passionate about Congolese popular music. Leo's collection represents every conceivable genre and variety of both rural and urban African music, and he has traveled to every country in Africa. There are very few people who can say that. And he was recruited very early on by, of all things, a company in Hollywood that had sought music in order to populate films coming out of Hollywood that could be about Asia, that needed films, film music from around the world. So he was hired by a company called Tempo Records. Colonel Irving Fogel went and recruited Leo, and he began his career recording in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, all over Asia and Southeast Asia and Central Asia. From there, after 3 years, he was asked by Colonel Fogel to now begin work in Africa, because that was 1957. Ghana was the very first sub-Saharan country in Africa to obtain its independence. And Leo was sent to Ghana and then Guinea in 1958 to start recording music of these brand new nations.
Track one, take one, Chedo.
Well, Leo Sarkisian was born in 1921. He grew up in Lawrence, Massachusetts. His parents were Armenian, and they came to the U.S. from Turkey. He spoke three languages at home, Turkish, Armenian, and English. Leo was also a talented artist. In college, he studied art, he studied illustration, and then came World War II. He enlisted in the war, and he was recruited as a map maker. At that time, he landed in North Africa. Leo, take us past the war. It's a new world, a post-war world. And the world of broadcasting has grown incredibly, and you ultimately became the host of Music Time in Africa for the Voice of America.
Well, what led to that was when I returned back from World War II, I immediately went to New York City. And there I was working as a commercial artist, but every evening I was at the New York Public Library, and I started going through what was written in books about world music, Chinese music, Indian music, African music. I just went through everything I could read every evening. Somehow, I just felt that there was always blanks, because a lot of those things about the music of different countries was written by travelers, the first British travelers and the Portuguese and Arab travelers. And they would describe musical instruments. But yet, I, growing up as a folk musician and playing, I had a different feeling as I read what had been already written about music in those countries. And I started making notes, saying that I wish I could go to that country and really see what those musical instruments look like. And then one day I got a a knock on the little room that I was living in just above Greenwich Village in New York City. And when I opened the door, there was this tall, handsome-looking man with a fancy coat and a hat with a feather in it. And all he said was, "I'm Colonel Fogel, president of Tempo Records in Hollywood. I've read some of your notes. Would you like to come and work for me in Hollywood?" Well, right then and there, it took me only a few seconds, and I turned my career from art, and I went to Hollywood.
What did that feel like as you were able to go to corners of Africa that most people maybe never could even imagine, and you could grab what they were producing in terms of music?
Well, I just felt at home. Leaving leaving the United States, the first country we landed in, of course, was Karachi, Pakistan, where Tempo Records that I was working for had already made arrangements. They wanted me to help to work in Pakistan radio to help the engineers and show them some of our recording techniques that we had back in Hollywood. And I was very, very lucky that at that time the head of music at Radio Pakistan, Mr. Galani, he took me, he said, "Let us start recording music in my country." He says, "There are many areas," he says, "that I haven't gone to, and let us go together." I traveled all over Pakistan with Mr. Galani and recording Pakistani music for Pakistan Radio.
Kelly, I want to ask you for a moment with this collection of Leo's. Give us a sense of the scope and how many pieces. What are you inheriting at U of M?
So Leo, part of his mission was to go and to collect music from all varieties of ethnic groups that might find their way into a Hollywood film at some point along the way. But while in Guinea, he went to Ghana, and then after that, Guinea. That's where he was recruited by Edward R. Murrow to come work for the United States Information Agency and help these new independent nations of Africa set up their own radio stations. So as you heard, he'd worked with Radio Karachi, he'd worked with Radio Kabul. He arrived in Ghana and worked with Radio Ghana and Radio Conakry in Guinea. And he just continued. Radio Comoros, Radio Tanzania, Radio Sierra Leone, Radio Liberia. There's hardly a national radio station that doesn't owe some debt of gratitude to Leo Sarkisian for helping to train sound engineers, train people in how to cut and splice and create the radio shows that you yourself are also involved in making. So that's what he did, was going around, and as part of the practical training that he did in each of these countries, he would take sound engineers into the field to do recordings of their own country's heritage that would be used in these new radio station shows, but also for purposes of posterity, to document the cultures that existed, because coming out from under colonialism, colonial orders maintained the position that Africa had no culture. So it was very important. Country after country established a ministry of culture whose job it was to identify, document, and promote local culture. And Leo was part of that process. So the collection includes roughly, I think, 200 to 300 recordings that Leo himself did in these countries in Africa. And again, every country practically is represented. But beyond that, he also then would receive copies from Radio Tanzania, Radio Comoros, Radio whatever, when they would finish making their own recordings. And they would send courtesy copies to him in thanks for the effort that he did in training them. So then we have a whole bunch of recordings that were produced on the continent by these new radio stations as part of the collection as well. And in some of those cases, such as Radio Sierra Leone and Radio Liberia, that, of course, suffered years and years of civil war, the originals no longer exist. So the only copies that exist in the world are the ones that we have in Leo's collection. Beyond that, he was sent by VOA to cover major events. So, for instance, when Louis Armstrong performed at the Tunis Festival in Carthage in 1967, the only known recording that we have of it is here in the Leo Sarkisian collection. So, and the very first, we suspect, the very first recording of Fela Kuti, one of the most famous artists ever to come out of West Africa, a 1965 recording before he had really made it big, is also in this collection, as is one of the first recordings of Bembeya Jazz from Guinea. And I could go on, but so there's an amazing wealth.
And I saw tell me if this is right, more than 10,000 audio reels along with all the 45 RPM singles and the cassette tapes. It's mind-boggling.
It is. It's an incredible. A lot of those reels are also full of information because they're Leo's shows. Twice a week, Music Time in Africa was broadcast. And each of these half-hour shows has, you know, not only the music, but sometimes interviews with musicians that Leo carried out. So it's a wealth of information that we will take many a year to parse through in order to catalog and understand what's in all of it.
And how did this all end up in Ann Arbor?
Well, I met Leo 18 years ago right here at the University of Michigan. I had not yet acquired my position. I had not yet even finished my PhD, and I was presenting at a small gathering hosted by our former vice provost for senior vice provost for academic affairs, Lester Montz, who is himself an ethnomusicologist and a specialist on Liberia. So I was at this gathering that Lester had called together of specialists on African music. Leo was also there. And from that moment, I came to know of the value of his collection. Once I became a professor here at the University of Michigan in 1999, 3 years after that first meeting, I made it a point to sort of work with Leo to try to get a sense of cataloging the master tapes that he himself had recorded, and then secondarily all the master tapes from the radio stations in Africa that he had been sent. We then cataloged his LP collection, the 45s, and bit by bit made our way through it. Then this past summer, we got the alarm message that the Voice of America needed the space that is currently occupied by Leo's collection. And it's a vast, as you said, tens of thousands of reels. These are not small paper items. So we went to work trying to convince the powers that be here at the University of Michigan that rather than allow the whole collection to go into a former salt mine in Pennsylvania, which is the plan of the day, into deep storage where it would never see the light of day, that if we could at least just house it, curate it, catalog it, and slowly raise the funds necessary to start digitizing it, that we would be preserving a very, very important collection.
Leo, you must be very, very happy to know that all of your years of loving work aren't going to wind up in a salt mine somewhere, that they are going to be out there living as students and scholars study the work and learn from what you did.
Well, that is the most important satisfaction for all the years that I've worked with that music, is that it is the collection has found a very important home.
And Kelly, thanks to the connection you made with Leo, now this is here in Michigan. There's got to be so many disciplines that are going to be able to benefit from studying this very valuable and rare African music.
Indeed.
Kelly Askew is the founding director of U of M's African Studies Center. She's an associate professor in the departments of Anthropology and Afro-American and African Studies, and a very key player in bringing the Leo Sarkisian collection of African music to the University of Michigan. And we've had the honor of talking with Leo Sarkisian, who has such a legendary career as an ethnomusicologist, a broadcaster for the Voice of America, who spent his lifetime being a one-man ambassador for America and collecting music from Africa. Thank you so much, Leo, for taking time to talk with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.